It's 8:16 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, the process for distributing the wrap tax funds gets started March 1st. In the studio to tell us more about that, I have the chairs of the Summit County Recreation, Arts, and Parks Committees for both the restaurant side and cultural side, Brooke Hans and Ben Castro, respectively, there. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning.
So where are we in the process?
So we are just beginning on March 1st online at the summitcounty.org website. Anyone who's interested can go and begin the fill out procedure of completing the application. You have all the way till the 31st of March to do that.
Okay. Is this the first time we've done it online?
Last year we did a kind of a process that started online. And the year before there was a little bit online, but this is a completely online year and it's going to be seamless. Right, Ben?
Exactly. We're hoping so. And so one of the other things that we're doing on the cultural side on March 7th at 4 p.m. at the Quinn Health Building downstairs, we're going to actually go through the PowerPoint presentation. So everyone that may have forgotten about the process can be reminded on what is acceptable and what isn't acceptable, especially on the cultural side.
Okay. Well, let's talk. I mean, the wrap tax, we talk about it. It's a taxpayer-funded. I mean, had to go through an election, right?
Yes. So we get roughly about one penny per dollar or 0.01% of sales tax for restaurants. And that is distributed out through not only the restaurant, but through the wrap and the cultural side.
Okay. And how much money do we have to work with this year?
Well, on restaurant, we have over $2.2 million, which is, in my recollection, the most we've ever had. And so we really, that's why we're here to do the outreach, to encourage as many applicants to come out, because there's a lot of not-for-profit funding at stake. And I think WRAP is different.
Yeah, WRAP this year, we have the most we've had in a little while. We have $711,000.
Okay, now why do you have less? Why does the cultural side of things have less? Mm-hmm.
Well, mine's cultural too. The restaurant and rep are both cultural. It's just they're different sources of funding.
And so with that, what happened is there was a vote where the split was divvied up a little more. So they get a little more the portions of the actual sales tax versus what comes to the actual cultural side for that.
So what is that split?
That's a great question, one that we've asked the county to clarify, and we're waiting for that information. But the restaurant tax was actually enacted by the state legislature, and counties can participate. Our county has been heralded for its process because of we were one of the first to establish a very distinct process of how we award money. And oftentimes you'll see at the state legislature where they try to dismantle this opportunity for funding. And luckily, Summit County has done a great job of creating a very clear process to fairly and equitably distribute the money. And so we've been able to fend that off and be able to redistribute that money throughout the community.
Yeah. I think I recall, though, Randy Barton, when he approached both Park City Council and Summit County Commission, that he was concerned that cultural was kind of getting the short end of the stick here and had asked that it be kind of a 50-50 proposition.
And I think that's one of the things we're asking to have that taken a look at with the county council on that. And so, hopefully we'll get some response as far as that's concerned. But, you know, I think the biggest issues or concern people had were talking about audited financials. Well, because it's all Summit County, that's why we have the requirements, even though it may be a little different as far as the amount of money they get from either the restaurant side or the cultural side.
All right. So when we talk about the restaurant tax, I mean, it's the money collected on restaurants. It's not that restaurants can come and apply and get some outdoor dining decks built or something.
Well, no, that's true. Unless they have a not-for-profit arm. Anyone who is a not-for-profit or a public entity can come and apply for that funding. And then that's what's good about using the Summit County website. You can go and look ahead of time before you apply to make sure you meet the standard of what we're looking to provide, grant monies towards. And these are granted funds, so we don't ask for them back.
Yeah. So tell me about some of the rules or the criteria, if you will.
Well, and restaurant and wrap are both different. Restaurant criteria, basically the state law indicates that we're trying to keep the fund going, and that it, so therefore it's going into tourism funding, things that generate more visitors. But that's a very broad category, the way that it's written. We're allowed to also support and provide funding for things that indirectly generate visitors. We call them flower baskets, basically, because maybe a flower basket didn't get someone to stop that time, but they came back another time because they thought that your street was so beautiful and they wanted to investigate what was going on in front of Main Street, you know, for example. And then wrap.
Wrap is a lot different. A lot of that has to be used for art, history, cultural history. So, for example, a couple years ago, we actually sponsored the mountain lion exhibit that came in for the Swanner Preserve. So very specific type of items that we actually will fund for.
Okay. So again, can people see anything now if they were to go online?
Not quite yet. Mm-hmm. We're trying to get it up as soon as possible, but definitely by the 1st.
Okay.
And hopefully it'll be very clear of what the opportunities are.
Yeah. How lengthy is the application?
Well, if you did restaurant wrap and the chamber, it's probably a 15-page application, maybe a little bit longer, but it depending on what you apply for, it's between 3 to 7 pages per application.
Okay. And you have it has to be done each year.
Every year.
Yeah. And then you as I recall, as the committees come in and talk with each of the applicants to find out whether or not they've met all the criteria or
both of our processes include a personal interview, and it's very enlightening to have a person or people from the groups that are asking for money to come and sit and explain their application. Maybe there's some things that we need to, as a committee, understand a little bit more, or maybe it's just the connection of adding a little bit of insight into some of the details that they've provided.
All right. So when we talk about $2.2 million, I mean, that's a lot of money. Is that trail buildings? I mean, can it be.
Yeah? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. I mean, trails are, I think it's a very clear connection between the increase in amount of trails in the region and our summer tourism. And so that's been one that it's been easy for us to help support.
Yeah. So, I mean, but when you have that much, I mean, do you think about just one big project or do you just kind of piecemeal it out?
Well, because last year we had 52 applications, and so if we were to have received one for the entire, I think it was $2.1 million last year, I think the other groups may have been disappointed to not. So that would be tough if we got a compelling application for the entire. But hey, please bring it in if you've got something that exciting. But we do have a lot of great, even small application, $5,000, $3,000, $10,000. So
okay, anything else people should know?
No, I think if you have any additional questions, please visit the website or come to our presentation on the 7th.
Okay. Again, that's going to be 4 p.m. where?
At the Quinn's Health Center in the downstairs in the basement.
Great. Okay. Hey, Ben and Brooke, thanks for coming in.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's 8:27 now. Good morning. Well, 2016 has gotten off to a busy start compared to this time a year ago. In the studio with details, I have Park City's chief building official, Chad Root. Good morning, Chad.
Good morning. How are you doing?
I'm well, thanks. So we didn't get a year-end report for 2015, but in terms of issuing the building permits, it looks like 2015 may have been the busiest ever, huh?
Yeah. For the last 10 years to probably 15 years, it's probably been the busiest ever as far as number of permits that we've issued at the building department. And, a lot of them aren't the large permits, but it's just overall number of permits that we've issued. It's probably the largest that we've seen in, at least 15 years, maybe even more.
Yeah. When I looked at the forecast, so it looks like you're expecting that, though, to back off a bit for this year.
Yeah, we're thinking it'll probably back off just a little bit for this year. It looks like that Park City Heights will probably see 15 to 20 new homes coming through is what they're expecting at this point. But we're still waiting to see for sure on that. A lot of the larger projects, as you've seen, you're looking on the hillside and it's not OSB. Every other home seemed like for a while it was OSB.
What's OSB?
It's a siding. It's a material that usually under construction you put up a siding and, they have the material underneath the siding. So it's ripped off and you're looking around, you see the Tyvek and every building's under construction, it seems like, and they're getting those dried in, kind of wrapped up. And We're looking at probably more projects in the Meadows and more remodels this year.
Yeah. Looking at the inspections for this year, they're up an average of 66 a day from 59 a year ago. Let's see. In December, though, that average went up to 103. Is that just people trying to get in for Christmas? God, that's busy.
Yeah. You know, it's our building department and probably I would say, you know, anything dealing with the ski areas is a little bit different than other building departments where you come in November and you have a lull from November to March. We have Sundance, we're a ski area, so what takes place is there's a big rush to get projects done before November for the holidays, and then there's another big rush to get it done before Christmas, and then New Year's, and then we have Sundance, which really just makes the whole equation flip upside down. For Park City's building department, probably the slowest time of the year is February, and then we start ramping up again with permits coming in, plans in March.
All right. Well, you kind of mentioned Park City Heights. What else do we have out there?
We have a couple projects that we're looking at. They haven't come through the building department yet, but we're kind of planning on a couple condos over by the Vernacular, over by Deer Valley. And also down by the Blind Dog, it looks like there's a condo project on the Triangle parcel over there as well. And then there's rumblings as far as Vail Park City Mountain Resort with a couple projects coming in.
For the parking lots?
For the parking lots and some others that they're working on.
So when we're talking about the funicular project there. I mean, we're talking about building condos on that hillside, huh?
Right down by there. Mm. I haven't seen the overall plans. I've just kind of heard from planning. So we're kind of, staying in tune to that because that could be a big demand on the inspectors.
Yeah. So when I look at, just the permits, I didn't see any new buildings, new permits for single family homes or condos, but looks like additions and remodels still pretty strong.
Yep. Exactly. And that's, that's kind of our permit tracking system's a little bit different. We have a lot of people that end up scraping homes. Basically, the home's too old, it doesn't fit, but the lot is perfect. The views are great. So they'll end up scraping a home, but it won't necessarily go under a new home. It's considered a remodel a lot of times, the way our tracking system's set up.
Okay. And that's what I saw. It was like for this month, six. You call them relocation and demolitions.
Yes.
That's a lot.
It is.
For 1 month?
It is. It's just location, location.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I noticed it caught my eye, $2.3 million remodel and addition there on Monitor. Is that historic single-family home there?
I'm not sure exactly which one that is.
Wow, that's more than most homes cost.
Yeah. It's, a lot of these, like I mentioned, a lot of the remodels get a little... we're Park City. They get a little more in-depth than other places if you try to save the structure, and they spend a lot of money to keep up with the Joneses.
So you staffed up?
We are still looking for a contract building inspector, and we're hoping to find one soon before the season kicks in just to try to keep the level of service up that we've been giving.
Yeah, I know you're paying more than some other communities, so is that helping or?
Or
is it just that people don't like that, don't have that job anymore?
Unfortunately, inspectors are kind of a dying breed, literally. A lot of the inspectors are getting older. When Roger Evans, Ron Ivey was here, a lot of those guys came in as where they didn't have to be fully certified under the state law. And right now, if I bring somebody in, they have to be certified for those inspections that they're doing under the ICC in the state of Utah. And we're just finding that there's not a lot of younger generation that's out there that is interested, because if they're in the trades right now, the economy's great. They can be making six digits pretty easy. And, that's not the case in government. So it's we have a mentorship program that we probably have 18 to 20 people on right now, where we're giving them the books or letting them borrow the books, and we'll pay if they pass the test, first two tests, and with the thought that we could bring them on, or you know, somebody else can bring them on as well. I'm just trying to get more inspectors out there. But it's tough pretty much nationwide, I would say.
So do you have to have been a contractor, though? Because you have to kind of know plumbing and electrical systems, yeah?
That's what we look for. And we're really picky as far as trying to find the right combination, you know, of person coming in. It's kind of analogy I use is, you know, do we get a puppy and it's going, you know, have to house train the puppy, but it's going to be the perfect, you know, puppy later on? Or do we get a dog from the pound that we're not sure if it's going to bite? That's kind of a bad analogy in some aspects. But when the inspector's out there in the contracting community, I don't want an inspector that's will grunt, will be rough with the contractors. I'm looking for the somebody that will help educate the contractors as far as, hey, what the code says, why it says, explain, you know, and try to help them through the process. And I've been on the other side as a general contractor before where I had the grunting type of inspectors. They would just kind of come on a site, grunt, fail me, and walk away. And I'm just kind of, hey, what gives, you know? Yeah. So, you know, I'm looking for basically people that can educate.
All right. Where are we with coming up with a ban on wood-burning appliances?
You know, that's a good question. I'm not sure. I know it was brought up to the sustainability department. I know the county's gone forward with that as far as a moratorium on all new construction, that there's a moratorium that they can't put wood-burning devices in. We're still not there. It's something I think that, you know, as the building official, I think it would be great to move forward in that direction. But we're not there at that point.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, just there's a bill coming through the House, 316, and it looks like it's going to pass the House, but it basically changes the residential code from a 3-year cycle to a 9-year cycle, and the rest of the codes, the electrical code, the mechanical codes, the building code for commercial will still stay the same. But that's going to be a big difference because the codes do interact at times from one code to another, where the residential is going to stay in a 9-year cycle, and then our energy code at the state will stay with the 2006 energy code. And there's a group of us that are opposing that House bill the way it's written. We want them to adopt the newer codes and stay in the 3-year cycle. Just because technology changes so fast. If you think about 9 years ago, what type of phone you had, you know, you might have had a BlackBerry or more likely a flip phone. And the way the code is on the residential homes, technology changes so fast that if the code is written to something that won't be, you know, the newest code then will be adopted 2024. What technologies have come into place as far as heating systems, lighting systems that we may not be able to allow because it's not in the code.
Sounds like the real estate lobby may have gotten, or Home Builders Association may have gotten to the lobbyists.
It might be, and just maybe a little misunderstanding, or you know, it's not the best interest of, you know, Park City or the state of Utah.
Yeah, I had heard about another bill too, and that was dealing with water heaters, and that they're going to require the low noxious something gas.
Yeah,
ones.
That's the same bill. Mm. Actually, it's kind of Representative Wilson's trade-off as far as low nox versus and staying with zero increase to energy, which is kind of an oxymoron in a way, because if you build better, a more energy efficient home, then, you know, you think of the times that the water heaters are used. It's only when you're, you know, the water heater's gaining heat again or someone's in the shower, right? Versus the heater runs all the time when you're not there. And so it's realistically, we just need to look at the state energy code and increase our the efficiency of it.
Yeah, I think what I had heard, the reason to go this way is just the emissions, the air emissions. And if you reduced them by that much, I mean, it would take like a third of the problem away.
Yeah, it'll take a lot of the problems they have in the valley with the inversions away. but it's just a small sliver of it. It looks sexy, but it's really not that sexy.
Okay. Okay. All right, Chad, thanks for coming in.
Okay, thank you.
It's Park City Chief Building Official Chad Root. KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. The Park City Planning Commission meets tomorrow in the studio to review some of those big picture projects. I have Planning Director Bruce Erickson. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So let's see, on tomorrow's agenda, the Planning Commission looking at some proposed LMC, Land Management Code amendments regarding noticing as well as historic preservation. So what's being proposed there?
This is the good. Well, first of all, Leslie, it's really nice to be back at full strength in our team after Sundance. We had some folks go on holiday and take a little bit of time off, and now we're back full strength, and it's really good to see. So what we're doing now with the Land Management Code is just making the final corrections from the historic district changes we made before Christmas regarding compatible structures and preservation of historic buildings. So these code amendments are minor, but they will increase the amount of notices the neighborhood are going to get before deconstructions, material deconstructions, or historic district design reviews. So the neighborhoods are going to get more notice of actions in there.
So you say more times or just a bigger area?
More times. Mm-hmm. This is actually an additional notification, and it's going to go out to neighbors within 100 feet of the action. So one more set of notices.
So would it be better just to expand it just because you'd involve more people as opposed to saying telling the same people twice?
No, we don't want to make it onerous. So if you're an owner of a 25-by-75-foot lot and you're notifying people within 300 feet, that could be up to 100 notifications. And this is just kind of a more minor action. So we're going to 100 feet, which is basically your adjacent neighbors. Down the road a ways, the team is looking at going to electronic notify system like we have in the city right now, which is e-notify. We'll just add a category for if you want to know if there's going to be a change to a historic building in your district, we'll just send out a text through the system the city already has. We'll be copying Denver on that one, and Hannah Turpin and Anya Graham are handling that.
All right. And then in terms of the preservation changes, what is that? You talked about compatible building.
We're not making any changes to the code now. We're just finalizing the notification requirements in the Land Management Code. These are on the amendments we made back in December.
All right. Speaking of historic preservation, though, the mine sites preservation planning, where are we with this?
Well, we're going forward with that. Last year, as part of Vail's expansion at Park City Mountain Resort and the construction of the Quicksilver Gondola, we entered into an agreement to have $50,000 and to have some of our mine sites remediated. We're now cooperating with the museum, who's taking the lead on a longer-range funding plan for that. So we're working on a three-way memorandum between us, Park City Mountain, which has a five-year commitment for funding, and the museum to determine who's going to do the long-range funding, who's going to have responsibility for these sites once they're remediated, who gets to make the decision, are there going to be easements for preservation, all those technical aspects.
So how's that coming?
It's a lot of fun.
I mean, is anybody accepting responsibility?
Well, it's a hard negotiation, and the municipality has a role to facilitate. The museum does a great job, and Sandra really cares, as does the members of her committee. So, and the mine company underlying some of the land ownership will need to come to the table eventually as well.
So where are we? I mean, have we completed an inventory of all of the structures?
Well, there's a couple of inventories out there. Park City Mountain completed their inventory earlier last year, and our historic planning team is reviewing it. There was another inventory on the Flagstaff annexation that's been completed, and the Historical Society and Sandra Morrison have sort of their list of things as well, which is very, very complete and very complex, so we're trying to bring all three back together.
All right, and then what, do some kind of priority?
We have the first eight sites prioritized, and between the city and Park City Mountain and the museum, we've agreed on that priority, and that's where that first $50,000 goes, is to that first set. And we did do some work with the resort on the California Comstock last fall before the weather came in.
Okay, and that's the one located kind of there by the Thanes,
exactly,
above the Thanes lift?
Right, where the martini bash happens on New Year's.
Okay. And then coming up, we're going to do the first round of other land management code changes for more precision and predictability, as you put it. What's this?
Right, right. So the land management code can be a bit of a blunt instrument. And when it's not applied fairly and correctly, we probably do more damage than we really want to do. So we're coming forward with probably a dozen changes to the land management code to make it more predictable for developers and for neighborhoods. Dealing with setbacks and steep slopes. We're coming forward with some changes to how we determine height in the historic districts. We're looking at trying to do something with flat roofs as we move forward. So that'll be our first round. Our first round really deals with changes to the code in our energy and sustainability classifications. The second round will come forward with the transportation changes and trying to incorporate those things in the Bonanza Park planning area, the Prospector planning area, what we're going to do with transit on 248. So that'll be the second round midsummer. And then the third round in the fall will deal again with our sustainability goals and our employee housing goals. So let me give you an example of what that means. Right now in our in any district in the city, we can make driveways up to 14%. Which is roughly 50% steeper than any road we allow in town, except for our historic roads. That steep of a driveway allows a home to be built higher and more deeply into a hill, which causes energy issues, excavation issues, problems for the neighbors when the rock drills are going on. Plus, normally that driveway would end up being heated, so we've got an energy component of that as well. So we're looking right now at reducing the grade of driveways from that 14% down to something comparable with what the county does. We're not final on that number right now.
So, what does the county do?
Right now, the county's at either 6% and 8%, okay. Which six is a little flat for our hilly terrain. It's different out in the flat spots in Snyderville Basin, but probably bringing it into alignment with our city streets. The second thing is those steep driveways, when they're heated, they're running off water when the snow is melting instead of having it piled on the side so it melts slowly. So that melted water runs into the street. And there's no heat under the gutter. So when the city plows the street, the gutter is frozen, and all of a sudden you're running water all over your neighbors, especially in the historic districts. So it's not just a fussy little problem. It's what we're really looking at doing more of these kind of deliberate kind of thinking on how we do a better job of protecting neighborhoods.
Well, and also when you talk about sustainability, I mean, there's communities out there that require house placement, you know, so that they – so that solar panels could be installed, and also requiring homes to be wired for solar panels. Are we ever going that far?
Those things are in our portfolio. I'm going to use the phrase my counterpart Chad Root used and tell you that that's in the sustainability team, but we have committed to the sustainability team that will move our land management code forward to meet the energy goals the city council has put out for us.
Okay. Well, let's talk real briefly. What have we got in the pipeline?
Okay, coming up in the pipeline, we've got a couple of legacy projects out there. The Alice claim is still there. You know, sometime in the spring, I expect they'll be coming back for that. We're dealing with some of the issues down in Bonanza Park. We've had a couple of applications for development down there. One the public has already seen. The other one is in, and we're reviewing it. So that's down near Anaya's Market and the Maverick. It affects all of that area.
I wanted to ask, though, I mean, because when Bonanza Park came in with like a master plan, I mean, they never got approval for a
right.
master plan. And there was a lot of thought that was originally given to road and connectivity and transit. Are we losing those opportunities now as we kind of do this piecemeal as opposed
no,
to?
No, because the crux aspects of our general plan remain in place. And so what is not in place in the Bonanza Park general plan is all those added amenities that the city was trying to force into that district, housing, height, all those kind of aspects. So the basic transportation core remains in place, and the basic land uses remain in place. So I don't think that we're losing any of those things other than some of those broader social policies that kind of collapsed at the end.
Okay. What about Treasure? Haven't heard about that in a long time.
Treasure's been pretty quiet recently. They may be rethinking some of their issues. I know that we've just completed some transportation planning on Lowell Avenue, so they're probably looking at what they're going to get required to do on that. And, you know, they have some time. The legal department continues to work with them, and planning supports that action.
Okay. Anything else?
No, I think we're all set. We're working on these kind of land management code stuff, and we're continuing with our compatible creativity mission in the historic districts. So we're working now through the summer on new design guidelines.
Okay. Hey, Bruce, thanks for stopping by.
Thanks, Leslie.
KPCW News Time now, 8:50. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, it's that time of year when Park City Police Department opens up the application period to attend this year's Citizens Police Academy. In the studio with details, I have Park City Police Officer Terry Knechtel. Good morning.
Morning, Leslie.
So why don't you just start by telling us what it is,
well,
the academy.
This year is the 8th year we've had this. It's the Park City Police Department's Citizen Academy. And what we like to do is annually bring in 15 people to the from the community, and we take them through a 10 or 11 week course on what it is that law enforcement does.
All right. And it starts when?
May 4th.
All right. And then so we'll run 10, 11 weeks after that.
Right. It depends. Sometimes the schedule can change because, well, life happens, and sometimes I have to cancel a class or move a class back.
All right. So have you picked a day that it happens on or an evening? Or do you wait for the group to decide that?
Well, I do it. I got it scheduled. I start it at 6 in the evening, usually on Wednesdays.
Mm-hmm.
And I have one Saturday class, which is about 8 hours. And that class will take them to the shooting range where they get an opportunity to use what we use in law enforcement, sidearms and our patrol rifles.
All right. So who's invited to apply?
Anybody in the community. And you have to be we have some requirements, no prior criminal history. I mean, if you have a, you know, a traffic ticket or something, I get that. But nothing in your background that you can't pass a background check. And when you fill out an application and you sign it, you are agreeing to allow us to do a background check. And it's a waiver. And I'd like a commitment from people. Like, I don't want them to miss more than 2 days because it kind of takes away from their ability to actually enjoy this class. So I'd like them to be able to commit to the whole time for the full 11 weeks.
Okay. So what do you do? You mentioned that you do go out to the shooting range one day. What else?
Well, I try to make it as broad as possible as far as all the aspects of the resources that we in law enforcement use. I bring in the fire department. I have a canine handler come in and do a canine demonstration. I bring the county attorney in and explain Utah law and the court system. Investigations, we'll have traffic-related classes or a class on traffic stops and things like that. And I'll bring in the SWAT team. And essentially what this is going to answer a lot of questions for the community is what do the police do besides, you know, pull me over and go for speeders and stuff. And it answers a lot of questions in that, what, you know, for instance, why were there 3 police officers on a traffic stop in broad daylight?
Why is there? I always wonder.
Well,
that.
You know, there could be attend the class. You'll find out.
Do you do any ride-alongs?
That's not what this is geared towards, but that's certainly something that's a program that our department offers. We can do ride-alongs and stuff like that with the proper approval.
Okay. So, and then those that who have attended, I mean, what do they tell you? What do they get out of it?
You know, I haven't. At the end of the course, I sit down with all the attendees at the graduation dinner, and I ask them to critique me. How can I make this better? 8 years ago, this program didn't look the same as it does now because I've taken things out and I've added some things. Because I honestly don't know what all the questions out there the community is going to have for me. Or us, I should say, as law enforcement. So I've changed it, and I haven't heard anybody complain yet. But I certainly, if anybody does have any complaints, I'd really like to know about them. How can I change that, make that better?
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, you just try to keep it interesting for them, yeah?
Well, you know, the whole thing, I think, is interesting. Mm-hmm. But, there are some places that, you know, attendees say, well, you know, it's sitting through the law class in the court system in a classroom. That gets to be a little bit, it's like being in college or back in high school and stuff. And I understand that, it's not nearly as exciting as the canine demonstration or bringing the fire department in or, you know, the SWAT team or going to the range and shooting guns.
Yeah. So Park City has a police dog?
No, we do not.
Sheriff's does.
We have about three or four different departments or agencies that we can bring in to utilize them if we need to.
Okay. So how do people apply?
Well, you can go online to the Park City Police Department's website, and you can fill out an application, download it, and bring it to the department. Or you can come to the station and go to the records during the business hours, and I put some copies there. And if anybody has any questions, they can get a hold of me through the department.
Okay. And do you have other officers joining you in terms of some of the presentations, or do you do it all?
I try to – well, I might teach one class, but there's I can't cover all the multitude of the different areas, not as good as the instructors that I bring in. I bring in everybody and try to use as many of my own officers in my department. But I've, you know, like I said, a canine, SWAT, and all that, resources we don't have, I bring them in.
Got it. Okay. Terry, again, people have till when to apply?
Well, applications are being accepted now. I've got one or two. And so I'm trying to get about 15 people. I don't want to turn anybody away, but it's first come, first serve. And I'm going to take applications up to about the middle of April, about the 15th.
Okay. Terry, thanks for coming in.
All right. Thank you.
It's Park City Police Officer Terry Knechtel. KPCW News Time now, 8:57.
Morning Edition and Morning News with Leslie Thatcher is brought to you in part by Park City Medical Center, Jan's Mountain Outfitters, Deer Valley Resort, Promontory the Ranch Club and Promontory Foundation, and Carl Malone Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram.